welcome to another episode of the Three Putt Schmucks.
We're a couple of average Joe golfers who are out there trying to be less bad at the game of golf.
Come along for the laughs, tears, and beers while we try to improve. Enjoy the show. Welcome to another episode of the Three Putt Schmucks. And this week, we're bringing the guests back. But we think it's rather fitting that we have someone who has been mentioned on the show already. It's that mate that whenever you go out for a round, he's out driving you on every hole, playing shots you would never consider. But most importantly, he's reminding you of how much a schmuck you really are. We are very excited to have with us on the show today, the one and only driver gifting, James Renner. Welcome.
Hey guys, good to be here.
Thanks, buddy.
And I feel very privileged with that introduction.
There you go. It's it is nice to have you on, and it gives you a good opportunity to. I think it might have been like episode one or two that we originally spoke about this driver that Tom has that hasn't really been mentioned much. It was episode one, was it? Okay,
it was episode one.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned it much. But it gives you a good opportunity, Raynell, to, I guess, if you want
to refute talk the about argument. That. Yeah, no, he threw me under the bus hard on that one, I think, so blaming the equipment very quickly. and that it was a gift that he never wanted. However, I think by episode three or four, he was like back on the driver train, wasn't he?
Look, part of the problem is me. Okay. But as well, it was just awfully convenient that you decided to take 3 years before you told me that it was a piece of shit and you couldn't hit it.
Yeah, look, I never had a good swing with it, but I don't know. Maybe I'll give it another shot. Maybe we'll bring it out of your bag at the upcoming golf weekend and see who can hit it further.
Yeah, have a crack.
That is a great idea. We could have a, what's the driver? What is it called? What is it?
The one I've got.
Yeah.
I think it's a Callaway Diablo.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Something like that.
We could have a Diablo drive off and see who cleans it the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get all the boys involved.
look, we didn't actually mention much about who you are, Raynell, and actually how you know us.
Well,
but us three here, we actually go way, way back, don't we?
We do. To our childhood years, even.
Now that you're saying that, I'm trying to, yeah. What year?
2000 and something.
I remember being at like a house party with you when I was about 12.
Yeah, probably around 2002, 2003, I reckon, is probably when we first started participating in activities together.
That we will not dive into on a recorded platform.
I was going to start by saying riding mountain bikes around Warunga or all the other things we used to get up to.
Helping mates across the road and community service.
Yeah. Scouts on us.
Three kids riding around, having a good time. But hey, Raynell, one thing has remained consistent through all those years, and that is that you've always just been a really good golf player. And I don't know if you like to admit it yourself, if you're good, but you've always been that guy that just like knows how to play. And like one of the first questions I wanted to ask you was, where did you learn to play golf? Did someone teach you, or did you just pick up a club and just had a great swing?
I mean, this is a good, great place to start. So one, I played hockey as a young guy, different hockey to Tom. I didn't play ice hockey. I played field hockey. So I think that's where some of the swing comes from, in that same sort of movement. But from golf perspective, my dad loves to play. And so it was something he picked up and used to take me out to certain places. And used to take me as well to the courses that he played growing up. And I think it's that bond that we have together. He's still probably the guy I play with most. Like, he'll call me on a weekend and I'll go out with him more than I go out with anyone else. just because it's convenient as well. You know, we've even tossed around the idea of him taking me back to all of his childhood courses to really show me like why he loves the game of golf as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. So it was your dad, like you, that's when you first,
he'd go and play, and he'd take me out to play three or four holes with him, kind of like how Tom's taking his daughters out now, actually. You know, just for the afternoon, like nothing serious. It wasn't a Tiger Woods situation trying to actually teach me and turn me into professional. It was just like, let's go out and hit the ball. Let's drive around on the golf course and you can swing a bit. That was about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so was that at a relatively young age or like, do you remember?
I don't remember the first time, to be honest, but I know probably from the age of 10 onwards, like I have varying memories of him taking me onto different golf courses and on different family holidays, taking me out for 6-7 holes, or, you know, even if just to hit once on the hole while he's playing his game.
Yeah. So you grew up in Kiwi land.
Yeah. A bit of Kiwi land, a bit here. And then I guess there's another point in my life where golf became really big, and it was my first job was actually at a golf course. And because I was at a golf course all day, you know, you inevitably end up hitting golf balls on a range just because you can. So
where was that?
That one was in the US. So that was my first job, getting paid minimum wage to clean golf clubs and drive golf carts around.
That's so cool.
How good. Those two experiences combined really developed my love of golf.
Do you feel like you've always consistently played? Like, has there ever been a time where you're like, oh, it was a few months or a year off or anything, or you've always just consistently gotten out there?
I wouldn't even say I play consistently now. There were a couple of years that went through where I'd play two or three times a year. There was one year in particular where I probably paid 40 rounds in that year, just because time and location provided it. But then even this year, I'll think back, I've probably played four times this year so far. So like every 8 weeks, that's not a lot of golf.
Yeah.
Is that like a geographical issue though, do you think?
A little bit. Some of it's geographical. Like if you're not close to a good course or somewhere you can get out easy, it certainly makes it much harder. Having people to play with also makes it way easier. Like if you've got a small group of friends that are getting out consistently or even willing to get out consistently with you, it makes golf way more fun. Not a big fan of, you know, going to a course and playing 18 holes by myself. It's not because I don't want to play with other, like random people when you sign up. It's just, you don't have the motivation to do it by yourself. But the year I played 40 rounds, I was living out in Orange. There was three other guys that were out there with us. And, you know, the one pastime we enjoyed together was getting out, even just after work, 9 holes on a whatever day of the week it was. And so we just played instead of going to the pub, we just play a round of golf or a few holes of golf together. And it was really convenient to go out and really cheap. So
it was kind of a little bit like that when you were living up here the first time. I think it was before you went to Orange.
Yeah.
And like, I think I went out with you and Kev at Magenta like once a month for probably close to a year.
Yeah. And that was probably the most golf I played up there as well. But yeah, it was because it was easy. We had people to go out with. Like it was the type of bonding you can do. And I think that's what's actually one of the great things about golf is it can bring different people together. Like you'd never hang out with my dad otherwise. I'd barely hang out with my own dad if it wasn't for something like golf, right? So, it's a game that does let intergenerational bonding happen.
Your dad's good fun to play with, though.
He's a shit fuck, isn't he?
He's a smart ass, yeah.
I was going to ask, what's his game like?
Oh, he's not quite that typical old guy of, like, straight down the middle short and just, like, tap everything up. He's a little more wayward than that, but he's phenomenal around the greens from like 80 meters in, phenomenal. And it's just one of those things. He's probably never been a big hitter of the ball, but he's just got that like short game dialed and he just scores because of it. Like you'll be trying to play him in like a match and you think you've got him on the ropes, and then he just comes back, and it's all in the short game.
Yeah, and that's what like a lot of pros say. Like, if you want to get good at golf, get good at your short game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can attest, short game is shit. Cannot putt.
can hit a ball. Yeah.
So short game doesn't run in the family.
No. I don't
know. About to make a really mean joke.
there's a height joke in there somewhere. I'm sure of it.
So Raynell, have you currently got a handicap?
Not an official one. I probably haven't played enough golf, and I'm not a member of a club at the moment. But I do remember what it was right before I left Gosford, actually, about 12 months ago. I was a member up there. So I was playing off 14.2 in the GA system.
Yeah, good.
I never like, know what the GA system is.
You guys got to learn about your handicap system coming up, because you got your Golf Australia handicap, and then that gets applied as a daily handicap depending on the course you're playing at. And all of the courses across Australia have a different slope rating, which tells you how hard or easy they are, and you get more or less strokes depending on that. There you go.
We've been through this a lot, and now it rings bells.
And this is why we bring on guests that are much better golfers than us to teach us in the ways of golf.
It's a journey, and I've learned over many years playing with lots of different people, and mainly actually my dad, and teaching me all these things: how to gamble at golf, how to score at golf. He's taught me all the great things, right?
How to give someone lip on the tee when they hit like shit.
How to make someone shank it just because you can get in their head. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think when I get two rounds in a row under 100, I'll study handicaps properly.
it's a great thing to start to understand, because it really levels out when you're playing with different people. Like when we go play this boys weekend, having some level of handicap across our whole group, it's going to be able to like let us be competitive with each other. And that's the best part about golf, is you can be someone like Tiger and play someone like Tim, and because of a handicap system, you guys can actually compete against each other.
Look out, mate, because he got a 39 this week, so he might be on the way to Tiger, hey?
Oh, a 39. Front or back nine, Timmy?
Far out. yes. It was the whole 18, mate.
Hang on, can I ask
what you mean?
How many of those were par fours, Tim? And how did you score on the par fours?
I just scored really well. Let's just leave it at that.
I've actually seen the scorecard. I know it.
You'll have to.
There.
You'll have to come up and have a go. Have a round with me, mate. Let's. I'll show you where you want to play.
Show me every shot shape that I need. That's what it sounds like.
There's no shot shaping there, mate. You could land a plane on half the fairways.
the one that got me, I can't remember what hole it was. He showed me the scorecard. I pulled up on it because it was a par four. I played on the weekend as well, actually with Big Kev. And there was a par four at Tim's course that was like 5 meters difference to a par three at the course I played.
Yeah, it was par four, 269.
Yeah, and I think mine was like, what was it? I called it out. But yeah, it was very close. I was like, I'm having to hit three shots on that.
It's just the position of it. It's on the side of a hill. It's really windy. Narrow.
And at 200 meters, you can still cut any corner that may be there with like a...
Exactly.
Plays really well to a slice.
it certainly does.
Right. Well, you guys have played a bunch of different courses now. How do you go in and prepare yourselves for like the different courses? Do you study them? Do you look at shots? Do you look at shapes? Or you just show up and go, all right, I'm playing?
That's why we're called three-putt schmucks, mate. We just rock up and... Hope for the best.
Don't put me wrong. I'm not showing up anywhere with like a course guide going, oh, now I need to walk this green to see how it slopes. I barely show up to warm up. I'm a sausage roll guy on the first tee, and that's counted as warming me up from the inside.
Yeah, I go on a Google image and just look at nice photos of the golf course.
Yeah, this one looks right. Sold. Booked.
Yeah, let's play here. It looks really nice.
I was wondering.
That's what I thought of Toolwoods. And then we got there and it was just like up and downhill and everyone was like, why are you walking? Like, oh, God, we don't know. It looked
the
really
photos rough. Looked really flat.
Yeah. To be fair, I wouldn't actually know what elevation is at half of these courses because, yeah, 2D images from satellites are great to look at, but yeah, they don't give you any idea of what's actually happening.
No way. Raynell, back to you just quickly. We asked our first guest these couple of questions, but can you recall or do you know what was the best score that you've ever had at a golf course?
I've never shot under 80. I've shot 80 on the dot, I think, twice. And it has been always, like, it still will be a goal until I achieve it, that I want to shoot under 80. But you've never gone under 80.
How good.
Yeah. But I would actually say my best round is probably 82 at Magenta.
That's a bloody round, dude.
Because of how hard that course is.
That course, Timmy, is like, if you're not on the fairway, if you're in the rough, it's deep rough and you can't see your ball unless you're on top of it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's just a fun course. It's really pleasing to the eye. It's got great shapes to holes, lots of good trees and bunker placements. Like you look at everything and it's there for a reason. It's not just, oh, fuck, this hole's a lot of green. We should put a bunker in or two. Like, and it just really, it looks great when you're standing over every shot. There's always a challenge in front of you.
It's probably the hardest course I've ever played. It's probably the hardest and top three nicest.
Yeah.
It's really, really tough.
Yeah.
It's really, really tough. Like I can't remember. It might be the 10th or the 11th there, James, that long par five. Yeah, that we definitely didn't put the cart in Tow Coast and roll down the hill.
No, that wouldn't do well, would it? That wouldn't be legal.
That's the fastest golf cart I've ever been in that one. isn't that like, it's like a 560 or 570 par five?
Yeah, I think 8 and 10 are both they're both over 500. And actually 18, I think plays the longest. It's uphill into the wind like 90% of the time. And I've seen people hit driver three wood and still not make the green. It is long.
I'll take you up there next time you're down this way, Timmy. It's like this course that runs up this section of coastline right next to the entrance.
Yeah.
And it's just so exposed to the ocean. So any lick of wind you've got that day, you're copping it.
The hole's going up and down, up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's an enjoyable golf course.
It's just so beautiful. It's just such a lovely place to be. It's tough. And it's like, from a schmuck's point of view, when you've got a, like, you're facing up at a 500 plus meter par five, and you're like, geez, even if I pulled three good ones together here, it's going to be big.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. I wouldn't go there and expect to shoot less than 110. In my current state.
Yeah. Okay. But speaking of like courses that you've enjoyed playing at, have you got like a course that you've played at was like, oh, that was like the best golf course I've ever played, or is it just all over the place?
I've probably played a lot of courses that are convenient a lot. I'd like to get out and play some more like resorty courses or go places to play a course. It's on the bucket list. Magenta would be at the top of courses that I've really enjoyed. And actually I'll throw back to where I first worked at a golf course is Poppy Ridge in California. It's one of those three courses that has three nines. They had one that ran up along the, you know, up along the ridge. And it was just beautiful looking back out over the whole bay. So
yeah,
that was a pretty stunning course as well.
And is there like a defining difference between like US courses and Australian courses? Like, is there?
Oh, good question. Probably only played two or three while I was there, but I think the US is really incredible, probably similar to Australia. You've got courses from like the PGA courses, the things with lots of history and way more history than we have down here. You pull out any name that's in there. You've got the really stadium courses like the TPC courses. Then you've got high class, high caliber country club courses. But then you've got great courses like they call them munis, like great municipal courses, which are really open to the public. And some of them are, you know, dog tracks and just rubbish, but like also some that are great. And so you get the full range there. I think they're really lucky, and there's a lot of golf courses up I played mainly in California, but all over the country, they've got lots and lots of golf courses. There's some staggering fact about how many golf courses are in Florida that I invite you to look up one day. It's hundreds.
Like in Florida alone?
I'm going on Google and meeting.
Someone needs to find this. There'll be some crazy stat. It'll be like, for every 10 people in Florida, there's 55 golf courses.
Some just ridiculous stat.
Yeah, there's people I work with, and they, you know, they're at a different course every day almost.
Yeah.
And they'll never run out. It's just a land of retirees playing golf.
Are we ready? Let's put bets on here.
How many in Florida?
How many courses total in Florida?
Oh, it's got to be over 50,000.
No.
I wanted to go high.
I was gonna go after Raynell, so 20,000.
No, it's only 1,250.
We just butchered this, haven't we? My hopes are completely busted now. Oh, I have this vision that the whole state was just a fucking golf course.
Okay, all right. This puts it in a bit of perspective. Indiana has 527. Idaho has 126.
Okay.
That's a lot of golf.
Florida has, according to this list, 1,480.
And have we got like land size? Like
what about California? Have they made that list? Because that's another state that I would just imagine has a lot of golf courses.
I'm looking for it. With all them so like Georgia has 523. New York has 970. Texas has 1,041. California has 1,140.
Okay.
Let's go per capita.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about.
Okay. Now I've lost Florida. Shit. Florida's like 12th down. One golf course for every 11,000 odd people.
Are they counting crocodiles in that number?
I don't know, but then North Dakota's number one, right? But there's only 123 courses, but there's also hardly any people.
Yeah, I don't think it's a relevant stat, but it's not completely shaping.
No.
The fact that it's got Northern California, I think, is the big one there.
There you go. Guys.
Sorry.
How many golf courses are in or near New South Wales?
Ooh.
Oh, 350.
427.
They've got here 138.
No.
That's it.
I suppose there's only like six or seven near me. Like,
there's 83 golf clubs that make up the Sydney metropolitan area as far as Palm Beach to Cronulla.
Yeah, but then, Tom, you think there's only six from like you to Tim?
No, there's more than that. There's probably like 30 or 40.
I guess once you get out west, though, it's very geographically dispersed and you don't have a lot of golf clubs out west.
No, you don't.
Yeah. With just over 1,800 courses Australia-wide.
So there's almost as many courses in Florida as in the whole of Australia.
That makes what you were saying sound a lot better.
I'm glad we brought that into perspective. It wasn't just a bunch of bullshit for nothing.
Wasting people's time. Thank
you to the listeners for staying on with us through that.
I apologize for derailing the conversation so quickly.
It was a nice derailment. Hey, Raynell, you wanted to, you want to break 80.
Yes.
What is your outlook on that? How do you break 80?
Consistency. I've got to go play golf. Like, so I, at the moment, I'm not judging myself harshly at all, because I just know I don't have the time. It's just not in my year at the moment. And when I can get back to playing a little bit more golf, get a little bit of practice in, get the feel for the putter, because that's a big one, yeah. Right? We talked about short game. We wouldn't be here if we weren't three putt schmucks. And I think it's just consistent. Get out and play first and then start trying to dial in my game. For like, I'm not trying to learn how to shape shots. I'm not trying to learn how to do anything fancy. I just need to get consistent and actually check myself on being a hero. You know, those shots where you're like, I could bend this around the tree.
I've watched you pull those shots.
Yeah.
I've been at Gosford on the second with you, and you're like, there's this little V shape between the trees. It's 100 meters in the air. And you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah. But those are the things that are then going to, like, if you don't hit them, it's like all of a sudden you've gone from potentially, you know, a four on a par four to a seven or an eight or a nine, because you just, you add to every mistake. You know, you shank one and then you're like, oh, I'll hit the hero shot. And then you slice it, and then you're hitting like three or four to get back. And it's taking that out of your game. That's what gets you, I think, keeps helping you drop. And that's what I do to get 30.
What were you calling it the other day? When I was talking to you about that, you said it was called something like
taking medicine. You know, if you've put one in the trees, just take the medicine, get back out on the fairway. Don't do anything smart. You know, we're not a professional. You're not going to be able to fade it around three trees and land it back on the green softly and get it to backspin and to within 3 foot of the hole.
But what if you can? What if it happens?
I'm sitting here preaching to the choir. I am throwing stones at glass houses because I am the exact person that gets into those trees and goes, there's a small gap there. I reckon I can hook a big one around this. And proceed to hit it straight into a tree. And you know, then I'm in a worse off position than I was 30 seconds ago.
I'm going to share a quick story, James. And it's I'm doubling up episode to episode because me and Tim just recorded the previous one before this and I told it. I went to full hero mode on the 11th at Gosford last week.
Oh, no.
And on my fifth shot, I'm not on the green yet. I've decided that I can hook a pitching wedge and I'll land it on the roof of some old dude's car.
Oh, man. Jesus. That's a long way from the 11th back over to the car park too.
To the car park?
Yeah. You said car, the pitching land wedge. On the roof of his car or his car?
No, car. His cart.
Oh, God. Oh, I thought you were
No. Woo.
The car.
No, I was just excited and half giggling while I was saying it. That's all.
That's a long way to the car park.
Yeah, I was like, Jesus, he just fucking smokes that pitching ledge and he's put it in the car park. Yeah. Either that or he's bladed it like no other.
Yeah. I just thought I'd be able to shape a pitching wedge and put it on the green for some stupid reason because I'm in the fucking trees in the first place because I can hit a ball, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah. The fact that we're in those positions to start with should tell us that we actually can't play those shots. Because if we could, you wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
So, no, it's a learning curve.
Do you reckon that's your advice to us as blokes trying to get under 100 is, like, if you gave any tips or any bits of advice for us, it'd be take your medicine?
Yeah, no, that's a big one. I've been told it many, many times. Different people I've played with have all said, why didn't you just punch out? Or, you know, you've got to just take that shot. Like, just take the extra shot. You know, it'd be better for your score overall. But, hey, we live and we learn.
Yeah, so that's the thing. That's what we speak about a lot is that you go for that hero shot because you've got in your mind what you want to get on that hole or what you want to get overall for your score. And if you don't go for that shot, then you're not going to achieve that score on that hole. And that's what can just throw your whole game out the window.
Yeah. You certainly panic a little bit and go, I've got to recover. But it's that those mistakes that start multiplying and maybe they're not mistakes. It's those poor decisions that start multiplying to lead to poor, bad scores. We've got to just be humbled by the game of golf and, know your boundaries on what you can and cannot play. And I think, a good one for you guys is going out and playing with people that are better than you because you'll see how they actually end up in those positions, what they do. Like I talked about how good my dad's short game is. This is the exact thing, right? He ends up in these problems or he ends up in bad spots, but he gets himself out of them because he doesn't play the hero shot. He plays short game shots that are accurate, that he can control. And then he beats me and I owe him fucking lunch every goddamn time.
Does he beat you every time or is it pretty?
No, I actually put him away on the weekend convincingly. But it's rare. Like I reckon he's still way up in the overall scoreboard in the amount I've lost to him over time.
Far out.
So
that's a nice goal to have though, like to be as good as your dad, and you got a lot of years ahead of you to get there.
Yeah, well we play off, I don't know if neither of us have a real handicap right now, but we tend to play off the same handicap at the moment so that we're not giving each other strokes. I think after the weekend, though, I might have to drop down one or two and have to give him back a stroke just because it didn't go well for him. he lost control of some of his long irons and it really put him into strife. Short irons, still that 80 meters in, perfect, but he started not hitting that long iron quite well, and we were playing a rather long course, so you really need to be able to hit sort of 6, 5, 4 pretty well. Unless you're driving the ball 300, then you're not doing it.
It was something that when you were talking about practice earlier, James, I wanted to ask you about. Have you been back to that virtual place much?
I've been twice. So not really, no. I got excited, went the first time, went the second time, and then have not been back yet. I went, it's like a virtual driving range. They've got, for those people listening, it's got, you can either play a course or you can actually practice and it'll show you your shot shapes and what you're doing and all the metrics that go along with it. I don't understand the metrics. And I think without a coach telling me what they actually mean, it would just be me making hazardous guesses to what I should do to fix them. So I just like playing like courses that I would never otherwise get to play. So like go out and play. I think I played the first week, I played Pebble Beach, and I probably will never get to play Pebble Beach, but it was fun just to be able to go and play that course. And that's what I'd use it for. I'm not a big fan of driving ranges or statistics. Cause I don't.
Yeah. Like actually just going out and just playing golf, right? Instead of
just practicing on the course, practice how you play. Almost like I'm a bigger fan of hitting two balls on a hole when late on a Sunday afternoon when no one else is around, rather than going to a driving range.
Interesting.
I just feel the golf course a bit better. You've got all the obstacles in your way. You've got to start looking at where things are and where you're going to land a ball. If you're on a driving range, you can just smack them. And you lose perspective of sometimes of like how bad or good that shot actually is. You aim at the little green or the little flag, but
you're not sure.
When you're on a course, they're not all perfect little circles with flags out there saying land it here.
And you don't get 15 opportunities to do the same thing.
Yeah. And then you don't end up racking up, 30 balls in 2 minutes and hitting driver every single time just to try and hit it straighter.
Yeah, we talk about it a lot. It's like the difference between the driving range and actually playing golf is just you can't compare it. You can't compare it at all.
No, I think if you knew what you're doing, you had really good like swing coaching advice to go after and practice and train on, the driving range is probably great, right? Lots of people get lots of benefit out of it. You can, build stamina on the golf course with it. But if you're learning to play, there's nothing better than a golf course.
Yeah.
And actually being out there.
For sure.
It's great advice. So we got to get more pro golfers on, Tom.
Yeah, we'll talk. We need to like find an online coach or someone we can employ to come on each week to tell us why we're idiots.
And don't you guys have someone giving you swing tips? Didn't you say you're recording them and sending them off to someone and they come back and tell you what to do?
Yeah, it's AI, buddy. Oh, it's like AI. the same technology that runs a cordless vacuum cleaner.
I thought there was an actual swing coach behind it. I completely misunderstood that concept.
I'll show it to you next time we're together.
Yeah, no, I'd love to see
it's,
it.
It's very vague.
I'd also love to have a swing on it and then just absolutely butcher my terrible goal swing.
If you come over and we both do a swing in front of this thing and it tells me I've got a better swing than you, I'm deleting it immediately.
Oh, yeah, no. Nah. We'll see. It'll be a good test for the golf weekend again.
That's it. How are your new clubs going?
They're going pretty well.
Did you know about this, Tim?
Did you hear about this? Okay, so I went, probably it was one of the first times I played all year, and it was actually, what, April, Tom? Maybe April,
yeah, May.
It was the first time I played all year. Tom and I went out to play 9 holes, and I managed to break driver and 3 wood in the same round.
Two holes apart.
Yeah.
What, just by swinging it?
Yeah. Both of them hit the ball and finished the backswing. I think the 3 wood was just dangling there. The driver fell off. Both heads just came off.
The driver head, I'm pretty sure, went further than the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your? Have you ever got your club head speed monitored? How hard do you swing the thing, mate?
It's quick. I don't know what the actual speed is, but it's pretty quick. I don't know where to get that metric from. Maybe the driving range thing I go to, I can probably get it there.
Yeah. Maybe if you went to the range setting instead of playing Pebble Beach, you might find out. Just don't look at any of the other data.
Yeah, the club path and the how open the face is and how closed it is, all those things that I have no idea what they actually will tell me to fix.
Just hit the damn thing.
As long as it's on the fairway, I'm playing golf, right? That's what I'm there for. I'm not. Yeah. I don't need to be within a 1 meter line down the middle, the meter wide fairway challenge that Rory couldn't even hit. If he can't hit it, what am I aiming for?
Yeah, what am I here for?
Yeah. I just got to make the fairway, and the wider it is, the better. It's quick. So, broke 2 golf clubs in, the same day, and then months went by, again, not playing golf. But then with all the chat about our boys' trip, I was like, well, I better go and get a driver. I've got to replace this golf club.
Up your old one from Tom, mate.
I thought about that. And
it's pretty funny, though. He breaks his driver mid-round, doesn't go and get the one out of my bag and try that.
I think, did I hit it? I feel like I may have hit it at least once. I don't know. Probably not. Anyway, so I thought I have to go pick that up. I've got to go get a new driver. So I was at the golf shop, the club store, and I'm looking around, and the cost of the equivalent driver of what it was, because it wasn't anything fancy. It was a TaylorMade M2. So just a non-adjustable, good driver from quite a while ago. So the equivalent brand new one was $900. And I was standing there going, wow, right. Just over the corner of my eye, there's a set on sale. So the M4 set. So halfway between the M2 and this new driver, in time-wise, full set. So driver, 3 wood, rescue, 4 iron through pitching wedge for $1,200. And I've just gone, you know what? I was supposed to come here and buy driver, 3 wood. I'm going to spend just as much money, and I'm just going to buy a whole new set of matching clubs and walk out of here with a full upgrade.
Outstanding.
And my whole theory was I don't play a lot of golf. So if I upgrade once every 10 years, that's enough. And I don't need the latest and greatest. I need something that is good and substantial. And the reviews online were pretty, top notch for a forgiveness rating, and also, hit the ball pretty hard. So I went, you know what? Good deal. Done. Sold. So I have a whole new set of clubs.
How good.
How are you finding having a rescue instead of a 3 iron?
That was a big change for me. I hit 3 iron a lot.
You did.
I went through a phase where, probably similar to Tom, I couldn't hit driver, could not hit 3 wood. Maybe I'll blame that driver as well, continue on that path. So I was just hitting 3 iron all the time. Right, I just went, if I to get good at golf, I need to be on the fairway and actually playing, not losing a ball off of every tee, because then you can never score. So I went down a 3 iron and just said, I just got to hit 3 iron 200 meters and I can play golf from there. And so I just left the big dog in the bag and got good at playing 3 iron. So now, not having a 3 iron, I panic a little bit, but at the same time, the Resky is kind of fun. It's easy to hit off bad fairways. You know, anything that's a little chunky, it's actually easier to hit off that than 3-iron ever was. And I can hit it about as far. So I'm going to start working it in off the tee, actually, you know, on those shorter par fours where I want to lay up a little bit. So I know my distance in from there.
You should definitely just try and drive it every time.
No, big tip for you guys, learn your distances.
Yeah.
That's a huge one. You know how far you hit an 8-iron and then add 10 meters either way. And then you can always dial in the club, but get consistent and learn your distances. That was what really actually helped me lower my score too. Because no longer was I coming up 10 meters short or flying over the back of the green by 10 meters or 20 meters or 30 meters. Because you're just picking the right club for the job and you let the club do all the work. Because then you don't have to overhit it. You know, I hit it at 150, it's going 150.
But, mate, sometimes when I hit my 8-iron, it goes 60 metres. Other times it goes 140 metres.
Yeah, well, you pick, like, you know, what should be a good stroke, like, you know, good contact, not chunking it, not fat, all those things, like, and just aim for that. Because as you get consistent, that's how far it'll go. Like, everything else is an outlier, and just ignore the outliers.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, I'm on the edge of going to look at a 3-wood and rescue situation, but then I'm in the exact same boat as you where I'm like, that's going to be like a $700-$800 adventure. Why don't I just get a set?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, I guess the where you end up is what set do you get? And do you commit and say I'm full golfer and I'm going to go buy really nice things because I play a lot? Or do you just buy the stuff that's going to get you by, that's a nice clean set that's actually built for you as well? Like getting your shaft, you know, whether you're regular or stiff or whatever it is, are you in graphite or steel because you need the extra stiffness, whatever it may be, like, you know, get set up for you. It's probably like a hockey stick, Tom, you know, you've got certain styles and stiffnesses that'll suit different
flexes, different types. Curves, different kick points, different everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long way. There's only a certain, you know, distance you can get with hand-me-down clubs. So
eventually it's an investment, but I play the same set of clubs for 10 years until I just upgraded. So they are, they will last.
Yeah. And you learn. It's funny.
It's funny you say that because it's like, I've only ever used hand-me-down clubs. I don't know where I was going with this and now I've completely forgotten. Move on.
But you, like, you learn how to hit them. That's the thing. Like, yeah, yes, they'll hand me down, but you learn them and you understand how they feel and how they hit.
This is what I was going to say. Because then when you get given a better hand-me-down set that may be more suited to you, and then all of a sudden you're hitting the ball heaps better. And that's what happened with the ones that Kev gave me, James.
Oh, yeah.
I was so inconsistent with my irons, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, from 5-iron down, now I'm comfortable.
Didn't you have grandpa shafts for a while? Like super soft ladies flex.
Dude, I've got so many
shafts on a full-length men's club.
Dude, I've currently got a 3-wood and a 5-wood in my bag that have senior shafts.
but I just can't hit them.
I just don't want to drop the wallet on expensive shit at the moment.
That's completely fair. I completely understand that. I'd offer you a 3-wood, but it doesn't have a head or a shaft, whichever half you want.
I'm not taking
you might hit it better that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust it. I don't know what happened. I guess that's what 10 years of moderate use does eventually.
Exactly right.
Moderate. I didn't use them every day. I didn't use them a lot. Some years they went a bit cobwebby.
Oh, well. Should we... I wanted to ask you, James, because you told me, and I'm sorry I'm putting you on the spot here, that you might have some questions for us.
Oh, that was a... I feel like we've covered a lot of it over the course of your episodes. I think this was like, as you guys started, I was like, man, I've got these questions that I'm dying to ask and find out about how these guys are doing it and what they're doing, like what they're learning from the process as they go through this. I'm trying to think of them slowly. I know one of them was like, how do you guys prepare when you guys are going out? Like, do you like, what do you take with you? Like, are you fuel? Like, how well are you treating this as a sport adventure versus a social adventure? Like, are you fueling for your day out? Are you like reading course, like not reading a course guide before you go, but having a look at like a course guide or anything while you're there, like trying to plan a shot? Like, do you stand back on a tee and go, you know what? I shouldn't hit driver here because it's too short to that corner or that bunker, and I need a layup so that I can have a, you know, a full 8-iron in or whatever it is. Are you doing any of that as you prepare yourself for every shot?
That's what happened to me in the last game I played, because I was mentioning it to Tom in when we were chatting earlier, that it was a much slower round. There was like a few groups ahead of me, so it gave me a chance to look at where I was, what I wanted to do with that next shot, and how I wanted to play it. And that was a huge shift for me, like just to stand back and sort of view what I wanted to do and where I wanted the ball to go. And by sort of visualizing that, it was just paying off for me so well. And that's something that I think that would be really, well, I think it's really important to visualize where you want to go, not just rock up on the tee and just hit the ball. Like, you know, if you're driving, you go, okay, well, I want to aim at that specific tree and I want to, you know, pull it back 20 meters from there. So you're really putting into your mind where you want it to go. And I think that was a huge change for me in the way I played.
Did it help with your club selection as well? Like, were you thinking about what club to hit and everything?
Yeah. Yeah. It made me change clubs a few times as well, which really paid off.
Like, that's what I guess the 39 is made of.
Yeah, like the last hole, like it's over water and I had a 4-iron out, and then I was like, you know, there wasn't much wind around, and last time I played this had a lot of wind, which I used a 4-iron, and then there was no wind today. So I just pulled out a 6 and it was just perfect, just exactly what I wanted to do. So, yeah, I think just standing back and just taking a few moments just to really try and visualize, I think was, yeah, really helpful for me.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat, and I think it's about almost playing the whole hole in your head, and how do you want it to be? Because for me, I've always gotten in trouble with the big clubs. So I'll be standing on a tee and saying like, all right, risk versus reward. If I pull out the driver here and it goes as bad as it can possibly go, where's it going to be?
Yeah, right.
And how far wrong is it going to be? And then it's like, oh, it's a 320 yard par 4. I can go 4-iron, 7-iron here and be probably in the same position as going driver 52. Like, just weighing up those results and then going like, well, that's probably a far safer option, because even if I hit a 4-iron really shit, it's not going to be in trouble. Where if I hit the driver and it goes rogue and 220 down there's water, and
or even like, what club are you more comfortable with? Like, are you more comfortable hitting that pitching wedge or that 56, like you said? Like, if you're more comfortable hitting pitching wedge, that's the better shot to play off the, you know, the first shot, not the 50, not whatever gets you to that 56. And that's what I'm still working on as well, is really planning out not just the first shot, the second shot. Like, if I get to there, then what am I playing?
You bang on though, because like I think about that often, where it's like I suck from like 20 meters and in. I always hit short. I don't put enough on it, and I just get scared to hit it, really. Where if I'm like 60 to 100, it's like, okay, cool. Now I can really get into it and put it up and down, and I tend to have a better time.
So what every time you come into a green, you should be aiming to be exactly one of those distances out. Like, what's I don't know what the club is there for you. Is it sand wedge? So aim to always be a sand wedge in. And then if you miss a couple of times, you've got to make it up with an up and down, but at least you're playing your favorite shot in every single time. Play to your strengths. The other one, like, you know, how do you guys go with not necessarily shot shaping, but using old school things like a bump and run, or like, you know, do you guys play like any of those style shots, like on purpose? Like,
so many. I'm ripping the shit out of bump and runs. There's so many Texas wedges. Like, I pulled out my 7-iron the other day. I was like 40 out, and I'm like, oh yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
I'm gonna land this 10 short, and it's gonna roll the whole way, and it did.
Absolutely, right. I use it a lot as well, because I don't need to fly it with a lob wedge up and down, there's a better chance that I'm going to blade it and send it so far through. Yeah. But it's one of those things. This is like that hero shot, though. It's the opposite of a hero shot in that, like, you're just waiting and expecting to be called a little girl or something and be teased. Yeah. And being called a little girl shouldn't be a bad thing. Like, apparently, you know, your daughters, Tom, as little girls, can hit the ball further than Tim. So none of us should be judging. But like,
hey, you know, hey, they use hybrids, man.
Yeah. What other people are going to think about your style of golf? Like, if it works, it works. Like, so I've brought the bump and run as a big part of my game now, and also not trying to use as many different wedges. You know, get comfortable and play the. If you've got a big open green, let it roll out. You know, there's certain times where you can't do that, but that's a big one. And then I can't draw a shape of ball, so I wasn't even going to ask you guys about that.
If they were,
purpose at least.
I got such a great power fade.
every shot, like, you can't turn it off and on though.
No, only driver and three wood. It's weird.
Oh man. And then
speaking on that though, I actually took my 56 out of the bag. I used to run a gap wedge, a 56 and a 60. And I found that I wasn't using the 56. It's also substantially shorter than the gap and the 60. So I was wondering if it was a help. It doesn't really help. That's like the length might be a little bit off.
No,
but I was just finding I just wasn't using it.
This is one of those things of getting your own set of clubs. You can get consistent lengths and consistent step downs and lofts, lies. What are the other ones that they're called? All of the different soles that you can get on wedges. So I do play a lob, sand wedge, gap wedge, and a pitching wedge. I play four wedges.
Yeah, wow.
I guess it comes with my game style, though, like we were talking about before. I have a good long ball, so I find myself being in those distances where I want to break it up to play full swings. Like, I don't want to have to play lots of pitching wedges at half swings or, you know, 56-degree wedges at half swings. I'm just not comfortable over the ball doing that. But if I, by adding in those extra clubs, I can get more comfortable with some of those middle distances or the in-between shots. And I've got 13 clubs in the bag. I may as well use all 13.
Yeah, fair.
I wonder if that's the difference though, right? Because I'm feeling far more comfortable in that 150 in than the further out stuff. So I'm more worried about like trying to build a little bit more consistency up top. So I've had the idea of I'm going to run a 3-iron and a 5-wood just for a little while until I kind of feel out what I want out of those two. Yeah. And then maybe I might go like, oh, I'm actually going to get a 56 back in now because I'm getting that first.
I reckon a 200 three in. Hybrid is a great balance in between those, that 3-wood, the 3-iron, sorry, and the 5-wood. And they, once you get comfortable, they're really easy to hit.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Something
that's kind of why they're invented. I think, you look to the LPGA, there's a lot more of them playing that hybrid as a golf club. And we should probably learn from some of those professionals who can't hit the ball quite as far as the professional men. If that's what they're playing, why would we think we can do any better?
Exactly right.
Because we are schmucks.
I really want to go out and play golf right now.
Are you G'd up real hard?
I'm so G'd up.
Just you wait, mate. We've got two games with the fellas in 2 weeks.
It's going to be great.
I was about to say three, but that's just me. I'm sorry.
I don't know how this is going to go in, like, trying to stay within. Like, I've been talking it up today, and, like, I've got to stay within myself, play medicine golf, don't do the dumb stuff, don't
do the hero. Please do your hero shots, mate.
But, like, there's some, like, we're still yet to figure out completely what's on the line at this at this golf weekend.
If there's anything on the line, the hero shots come out, don't they?
Oh, they're going to come out, and that's the exact opposite of what we need to do for our golf weekend. If you don't want to be wearing, I know, the tutu at the end of the weekend, if that is one of said forms of punishment, or handing over every dollar bill that you have built up over the weekend in all of our gambling exploits, then can't play those hero shots, but God, it's going to feel good if you pull one off in front of all the boys.
It's going to feel great.
Are we going to be playing in two? Are you there for both games, James?
I'm only there for one. I'm actually flying out to Vegas the following morning, so I have to get home, unfortunately.
If Saturday is big day.
I'm just Saturday wondering.
Is a big day.
I wonder if we're going to be splitting into two threes. Do we maybe make a gentleman's agreement and actually try and play some decent stroke play?
Oh, play. Well, why would we play stroke match? None of us are good enough to play stroke play.
Yeah, I think match.
Match play.
Sorry.
It's okay. I just don't like in that because then you know you still play every stroke, but everyone's still in the game every hole. If you play stroke play, you can have two bad holes and then
okay,
you're no longer relevant, copy. Right?
But let's not be jerks about it and be like, yeah, you can definitely make that.
So you can do, we'll do that on Sunday. You guys can play all the hero shots you want on Sunday. Saturday is a game for gentlemen.
Saturday is a, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you can definitely draw your three iron around that tree for 230.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you talking about? You do that all the time.
Yeah, I've seen you hit a 300-meter driver. You definitely can drive this green. Go for it. Eagle opportunity. Come on.
Oh, you, the old you would have.
George would have.
Yeah, Georgie. All right.
That's a story for another podcast.
Mm.
Anyway.
Let's do would you rather, Timmy. What do you reckon?
Yeah, let's get them done.
All right, James. Would you rather fight 1,000 ant-sized bulls or one bull-sized ant?
Whoa.
I'm trying to picture what 1,000 would look like. How big an area would 1,000 bull ants?
Dude, just look like 1,000 ants.
But bull, like, yeah, I suppose.
Just get like a cricket pitch roller out. Hang on, James.
You know what? feel like ants are far more dangerous with their like little biting mouth hole things. Like very small bulls aren't going to do a lot of damage to you. The big fear of a bull is how heavy and dangerous they are. They're not very bitey. So I reckon I'd take on 1,000 ant-sized bulls.
I was about to say, dude, a bull-sized ant would be savage.
Yeah. The only thing I'm worried is, like, it has their weird exoskeleton thing been weight rated to, like, however big a bull is, and it would just collapse itself and actually not be able to move. That's what I was also weighing up in my head. But, like, they're really good because they're so small and can carry 10 times their body weight and stuff. But if you make them really large, do they just kind of implode on themselves because they don't really have a skeleton or anything?
Yeah, or does it just get even crazier and they can just pick up a whole building?
Yeah, that's probably worse. It could just pick up the Titanic and just throw it at you.
Moving on, we've just said implode and Titanic in the same conversation.
That was completely unintentional. Oh, God.
Am I saying the next? Okay, cool. Would you rather have spaghetti for hair or sweat mayonnaise?
Oh.
Can you imagine?
That'd be so gross.
Neither of those things are great. Like, spaghetti for hair.
A bit like a carbonara too, like nice and creamy.
You could shave it.
Especially if you did both. If you were sweating out through your head, mayonnaise into pasta hair would be disgusting. It'd be extra gross. I think I'd go mayonnaise out of... pasta is hair. I wouldn't want mayonnaise coming out of all the weird parts of my body. Like, can you imagine your shoes filling up with mayonnaise after a long day of like walking or something? You know, you come home, you
just sludge.
I've got a bit sweaty feet, and just the mayonnaise in there would be gross, and I'm out. I'm done there. Spaghetti hair.
All the weird places.
I was just thinking underarms since he started saying.
I was thinking my feet, the back of my knees. Like the places where you like are already uncomfortable when you sweat, not like the normal places where like, you know, just your underarms where you're like, oh, I can deal with that.
We should definitely move on here.
All right. We're getting deep into that.
Yeah. I could go for hours.
Would you rather have a driver to take you everywhere or a private chef? Oh my gosh. A private chef who makes all your meals.
Chef. I love to drive, and I would love to just eat someone else's food all the time.
Yeah, it's fair call.
Great, cool. James, it has been an absolute pleasure, mate.
Oh, I've loved it. This is great, and I'm looking forward to the boys' weekend to get away.
Yeah, we're going to me and Tim have been talking about it. We're going to actually do the schmuck board reviews of each course straight after we play with everybody.
Brilliant.
So it'll be a little bit chaotic, but you'll be part of that as well, which is cool.
I cannot wait, and I'm definitely going to try a sausage roll at each of the golf courses yeah. and make sure that that becomes part of the rating, because a good pie or sausage roll at a golf course is the best way to warm up.
Save that for the schmuck board.
Absolutely. No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, and I really look forward to seeing how well your games have come along since the last time we've all played.
Unless either of us have a Voldemort round, and then we just, yeah. Anyway.
We'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it.
All right. Schmucks. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, buddy.
Schmucks.
If you enjoyed this, give us a rating and a follow so you can keep up to date with all the latest.
All the latest being Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and most recently, Threads account. So, schmucks, get around it. Schmucks.